friends, and welcome to another edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Tonight is a program from the deep archives, from yesteryear, from yesterdecade, really. Probably among my first guests back in 1996 from the East Orange Studios when I was first broadcasting. And I had a few guests on because early on I recognized it was always great to have guests on. And I really didn't even have that many records then, so it was especially important to have guests on. But this person I had on was probably the only guest I've ever had who lived through the phonograph era. His name is Mr. Fred Hauk, and he's about 94 years old when he came on the show or so. And yeah, he had been a lifelong collector of machines and records and had some great perspectives on the hobby before it was a hobby, when it was the current technology, when he was growing up with it. So I had on another guest, Mr. Bob Farrell, who I think I made a cassette of this and maybe made it for him, but then I don't have the cassette anymore. Maybe I do, but Bob gave me a copy, so now I have it again. I was able to hear it and bring it to you with a little editing. It needed some audio work and some stuff done to it, so got that together. But yeah, Bob had brought Fred down, and I remember the day pretty well. Back there in old East Orange, New Jersey, where FMU was first doing its thing. And yeah, first few years of the show there. So, okay, let's do this. Mr. Fred Hauk, 1998 Antique Phonograph Music Program.
Right in the corner where you are. you may glide across the farm, right there in the corner where you are. Right there in the corner where you are. Right there in the corner where you are. Someone far from harbor, you may glide across the farm.
Hello, hello, hello. Good evening, friends, and welcome to the Antique Phonograph Program. Tonight, I'm your host, Mac, playing all sorts of records, bringing you an all-cylinder show tonight. I had a friend of mine, Mr. Bob Farrell, in a few weeks ago, and we had a good show together. And he mentioned about another friend of his, Mr. Fred Halk, and he has brought him around here tonight to share some of his records of his collection. So say hello to everybody, guys.
Hey, Mac, it's good to be back.
Say hello, Mr. Halk, to everybody. How are you doing today?
Say hello, everybody. Just say hi.
Oh, hello, everybody.
All right.
I'm Fred Halk from Bloomfield, New Jersey, living in the town of Bloomfield for over 90 years. Hmm. So I'm not the type that moves around very often.
Well, this is a great opportunity, I think, Mr. Halk, to have someone who's been involved in collecting these type of machines for a very long time. And I think I speak for everyone. I'm glad that you're here and you're 96 years old.
97
years old.
Yeah.
So it's great to have your perspective on what these machines have meant to you since you were growing up. Do you remember the first machine you had and what it was like? Do you remember seeing your first machine and listening to it?
The first machine was given to me quite a few years ago. That's how I got really started in collecting. I had a lot of parts missing, but I eventually got it together. And ever since then, I've been quite a collector.
Now, how old were you, do you think, when you first heard your first phonograph? Do you remember what it was like?
When I heard the first record, I was about 7 years old. And what really happened... The girl was living at us. She had a boyfriend across the street, which his name was Charlie Brown. And he used to bring his phonograph over with the horn and the records and had the horn under his arms. That's how I really fell in love with phonographs. I had my hand on one of them records, and I wish I someday could own one of these records only. But that was the beginning of my love for phonographs.
Now, was he courting her with the phonograph, you think? Was he courting her with the phonograph? Was he trying to make a good impression on her with the phonograph with Charlie Brown?
He was dating her, right, and bringing the phonograph by to entertain her, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think they went spooning?
Spooning? I don't know what that is. He wants to know, well, that's what spooning is.
It's an old term, I thought. Spooning. Oh, never mind.
better skip that one. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
No, my hearing is so good, you know.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. So we had talked about that you have one of your first records here that you had ever heard.
The first record I ever heard was Under the Shade of the Old Apple Tree. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to hear that one a little later. Yeah. I'm going to get this next one set up, Bob. Why don't you tell us which one it is?
Okay, the first record that we played was Bright in the Corner, and I've heard that record played many times in Mr. Halk's basement, and I was fortunate enough to pick it up at a show recently, and I was just very happy to pick that record up and have one of Mr. Halk's songs. It's a really great popular German song, and the next song we're going to continue with is another favorite of Mr. Halk's called Rainbow.
Rainbow, my heart's beguile. Give me a smile. can't you see? It's fate, he cried. Come love and be my happy bride.
Brighter than the rainbow beamed the love light in her eye. And as they wandered home that night,
beneath the moonbeam's silvery light, off he sang with delight.
Okay. Now, that's an interesting record because I have a copy of that record. I have that one, but I have a two-minute version of that one. So it sounds like it's the same. It's all the vocal parts, but...
Are we on the air? Yeah, we're on the air.
They have the vocal parts, but they don't have the little instrumental parts that they added in there.
So they doubled it up. Yeah. It's like the instrumental version.
Right. Now, that was Billy Murray and Ada Jones. Now, Mr. Halk, I wanted to ask you, did you ever see any of these artists live playing, any doing shows in New York or anywhere?
No, I never seen them, no. Nope.
Did you ever see Billy Murray perform?
Huh?
Billy Murray or no?
No.
No? Okay.
Okay. Did you ever go to any of the shows like the Ziegfeld Follies or... any of the vaudeville type shows?
Yeah, I used to go to shows in New York, but nothing that I know is on records. What I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about you had some experience with Mr. Edison, didn't you, Mr. Hawk?
Yes, when I must have been about 12 years old. He used to be down my street and he had a plant over a battery plant over there. That's part of Bloomfield, but it's almost on the bow of the line. And he used to be driving down with his electric car and go over the canal bridge over Harrison Street to his battery plant. That's the only time I used to see him personally. Look at him.
So you never got a chance to talk to him?
No, I never got talking to him.
But you saw him one other time.
Oh yeah, I used to see him.
Yeah,
not to talk to him.
How about the story when you were working in Newark in the flower shop when you saw Edison? In Bloomfield, right?
When I worked in the flower shop.
That's a great story.
His daughter called up about the flower shop which I've been working in. I was a designer there at the time, and she had ordered a little nosegay, funeral piece, small piece. And when I got to the gate of the Longland Park, a state trooper guided me up to the home. And when I got there, that whole lawn was covered with flowers. They had to hire people to take the flowers. They had so many flowers they never could have gotten a home. So they had to hire people to dismember these pieces. And they were donated to hospitals and homes. And another thing, a baggage car came down from Massachusetts with a whole load of flowers, and some were made solid orchids. Mm. That was, I never seen so many flowers at one time. So that was it.
Now, where did that funeral piece go that you brought up? That
little flower. Getting back to the funeral piece, that little note. It was only a small little nosegay, we could call it. That was put in the casket with Mr. Edison. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how I got to the Edison's funeral.
So you added your little piece to Mr. Edison's casket.
And we put in the casket. Yeah. That was from his daughter. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's as far as
how old were you then?
I was 31 years old.
Right, because he died in 1931.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
okay. Well, let's play our next record now. What are we going to be hearing next, Bob?
Okay, the next 4-minute Edison cylinder we have is called Sauerkraut is Bully. And this one is a favorite of Mr. Houck's, and I've heard him play it in the basement quite a few times. And it's a comic German song with a lot of Germanisms. And I think you'll love it.
Okay.
All right.
Is this got a lot of yodeling to it? Because I love yodeling records. I was hoping this was going to be a good yodeling record.
There may be some. There may be a little in there.
If you will only listen to who I speak about, I ain't going to tell you how to make that sauerkraut. Sauerkraut ain't made of litter, as everyone supposed. But off that little flower, and he called the cabbage rose. Sauerkraut is bully, I told you in the time. I think I ought to know for why. I eat him all the time. Then it's sauerkraut, yes, it's sauerkraut. That's good, you know, for me like it so. Then it's sauerkraut, yes, it's sauerkraut. Only 5 cents, one pint. Hungry am I, hungry, lip, hungry, 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 hungry am I. When sauerkraut commenced to smell, that he can smell no smeller. We put him in that little barrel, what's way down in the cellar. We put him in that barrel and stamp him with our feet. We stamp him and stamp him to make him nice and sweet. Sauerkraut is bully, I told you it's the time. So help me cheese and braggers. I eat him all the time. Then it's sauerkraut, yes, it's sauerkraut. Why, it's good, you know, for me like it so. Then it's sauerkraut, yes, it's sauerkraut. Only 5 cents, one pint. Hungry am I, hungry lip, hungry lady, I am your lady. Hungry am I, hungry lip, hungry lady, I never will have a dear little baby boy. Oh, very good child, but never will cry and make a man blessed and glad. Some people see pleasures away from their home, while I by the fire do keep. Oh, the fire burns bright, I could sit me all night while rocking those babies to sleep. Oh, yeah, but my dear little wife is just 10 years younger than me. She's full of enjoyment and plenty of fun, and oft times goes out for a spree. She leaves me behind those babies to mind, the house in good order to keep. While away she does roam far away from her home, while I rock those babies to sleep. Away, away. One night when I got those babies to sleep, I took a short walk down the street. And there, to my surprise, I saw for my eyes my wife with a policeman 6 feet. At first, I got wild. I bummed her on smile. Said, I've been taking a peep. They've been hustling and kissing, all in their while I wrapped up babies to sleep. Olé, olé. Mama will come home whenever she pleases.
See, I knew there was going to be some yodeling in there. George P. Watson, he's one of my favorite yodelers. I love it when George P. Watson yodels.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Houck, you were talking about when you first saw that machine when you were very young.
Yeah.
When did you get your first machine now?
Well, my first it was given to me.
Mm-hmm.
By a party that used to be an actress in the Hippodrome in New York. She was the high diver in the Hippodrome in New York, and she had retired. She lived in my neighborhood, and someone had told her that I was interested in phonographs. So I went up to, I was told where she lived, and I went, it was only a couple of blocks from my house. So I went to the house, and she gave it to me. She wouldn't take anything for it. And that was my beginning of collecting phonographs.
Now, what kind of machine was that?
That was an Edison standard machine, and it had parts missing. But anyway, I got it together, and that was the beginning of my love for phonographs, which at the end I had over 100.
100 machines?
I had over 100.
Where did you keep them all?
I have a big basement. And I had them on shelves and all around. And I had quite a few records at the end, too. I must have had about 4,000 records.
Wow.
Yeah.
4,000 cylinders, you mean?
Yeah, cylinders, yeah.
Okay.
Cylinders. And I still have a lot of diamond discs. That's the flat records, which Edison started, they built too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Edison
was in love with his cylinders. And it was, he hate to give up the cylinders, which was really out of date at that time.
Well, it's hard to give it up after you invented it, too. It's like your baby. You don't want to give your baby up, you know.
Well, Columbia was the one that gave him the hard time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Now, did you like collecting the flat discs also, or did you only like the cylinders?
Oh, I collect both. The diamond discs with the thick records
and
the cylinders.
What about the thin discs, like the Victor... The Victrola discs and the Columbia discs?
I collect all kinds of records, even the 70, the 78s and the Edison Diamond disc, which happen to be a very thick record. Yeah.
Do you have any stories about in the 60s when you picked up a couple of those machines at a bargain price? You had some good stories. Tell me one of your about your concert machine. You picked up a concert one time.
Oh, when I picked up the concert, that was down in English Town, the flea market. And so it wasn't all together. I got it for $65, which today is parts were missing on it. But I put it together, but today it's worth over $3,000.
So
that was for 65 bucks.
Yeah,
woo!
Yeah.
So,
that was not complete, though.
Yeah.
But...
Well, when you were young and you had your first machines, they were pretty much state-of-the-art. They were the machines that people were listening to music, but you were still interested in them when they had essentially become junk to everyone else, right?
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Then no one wanted them anymore.
You could buy them for 50 cents a dozen one time.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and when Edison stopped making them, they took them to the meadows, dumped them.
Oh, metal.
And the people in Orange... They used it for fuel,
mm-hmm.
and the fuel the records were so hot that it ruined their grates.
Oh, boy. a guy once told me about a story where he would turn the motor upside down and turn the phonographs into boats,
and they would send them across a lake, and they would do them one after the other. Just they would wind them up. They'd put a little propeller on it, send it across the lake. It would sink. They'd do another one and another one and another one.
Yeah, one time you could buy a phonograph for $25.
Ooh, a standard.
Yeah. Not that same standard, around 500.
Yeah,
that's right.
Amazing. And that was only in the 1960s.
That's how it goes. They were good things, then they turned to junk. Now they're worth more than ever.
Yeah. Well, antique is the best investment today. Any antique. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's hear our next record now. What do we have next, Bob, coming up?
Okay, the next selection, this record is out of my collection. I thought I'd sneak one in this evening. And it's an incredible cornet player from about 1900. And his playing is absolutely magnificent. At the end of the record, he plays theme and variations on a German song called Do Do. And the first variation is simple, the second one is pretty intense, and the third one is unbelievable. So it sounds like there's two cornet players playing at once, and it's one man.
And let's also mention that this is a 2-minute cylinder we're listening to now, as opposed to the other ones, which were 4-minute cylinders.
Cornet solo, Do Do, with variations, played by Bohemian Thrill, Edison Records.
That last note sounds like the note that was going to break the glass.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, that was a very nice one, Bob. Well, let's see. Should mention that we're doing an all-cylinder show tonight. No discs. And I think this is the first all-cylinder show that I've done here. And my guest is Mr. Fred Hauk, who was brought here today by my friend Bob Farrell. And Mr. Hauk, being 97 years old, is the oldest guest I've ever had on this show. And it's great to have his perspective on the hobby of collecting phonographs. Mr. Hauk, what would you say today, what's it like to be a collector today? As you've seen it for a really long time, what's it like today to be collecting phonographs?
Well, collecting today is getting very expensive. And they're very hard to find. And the ones that got them asking outrageous prices for them. A lot of our phonographs are being shipped out of the country, and that makes them still more scarce. So,
yeah, you had said you had people come to your home from all over the world and buying some of your machines.
Japan, Germany, Holland, and well, not from my own country, naturally, but. The Japanese are really the collectors today, and the Japanese people they idolize Edison. I think they idolize us more than we do in our own country, because even the kids, even the children in school, they get taught about Edison, which we do not in our own country. Mm-hmm. So it's because it's a shame that Edison isn't recognized more than what he really is today. Mm. He was one of our greatest inventors. Yeah,
he was.
They even don't celebrate his birthday, which happens to be on the 11th of February. Yeah.
Well, because Lincoln's birthday is celebrated the 12th, usually.
Yeah.
Well, it overshadows it, yeah.
There could be 11 and be...
11 separate days.
Edison be 11, Edison be the 12th. I mean, Lincoln be the 12th.
Right.
Right.
And George Washington, right to this day, you're so mixed up, you know, which is whose birthday it is.
I don't know. Maybe we should change it and make the holiday everyone gets off on Edison's birthday.
There we go.
That should be the national holiday.
It should be.
It's damn right.
He did more for the largest inventor.
Most patents today.
He's
still
got
to
had
today.
Over Edison had over 1,000 patents.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Lots of ideas he got from people. Brought these things, ideas up, but Edison was the one that finished it.
Right, he could follow through. He could follow through where they couldn't finish it.
Yeah,
right.
Like Edison really helped Graham Bell with the telephone.
Right.
Improved that. And you name him, even Marconi, he even helped Marconi.
Right.
Yeah.
The radio.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be here today with the radio, right?
Mr. Houck, I've got a couple quick questions for you. Being raised in Bloomfield myself, I was fortunate enough when I was little to see Nixon come and give a speech in Bloomfield. But I know that you have seen a few of the greatest presidents that ever lived. And could you tell us what different presidents you got to see in Bloomfield?
Well, the first president I can remember, I seen Teddy. Teddy Roosevelt was the first president I'd seen. He talked on the corner of Liberty and Broad Street in front of the Sacred Heart Church. He was speaking there under the Bull Moose Party. Yeah. Then another president I seen Herbert Hoover. Hmm. He spoke in front of the Civic Center in Bloomfield.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the last one president I can remember seeing was Nixon. And he was speaking on the green in front of the Presbyterian Church. Hmm. So wow. I seen three of our presidents alive anyway.
Wow, that's amazing.
Now, why do you think all these presidents came to Bloomfield? Even Reagan, I remember, came to Bloomfield,
Bush,
too. Why they all come to Bloomfield?
Yeah.
They come to Bloomfield because it's a working community.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a popular, you know, it's a work, a blue-collar type town or whatever, and they visit the flag factory and they make the rounds on, you know, stuff like that. But
I know there's some kind of a stone in front of the town hall. I don't know if that's for Reagan or what. There is a monument, but for one of the presidents that made a visit to Bloomfield, it's front of the city, town hall.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't remember which one it is. I think it was Reagan.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's that.
Let's go on to our next record now. What do we have queued up, Bob?
Okay, this record is called the Motor King March, and Mr. Houck has explained to me that these particular records were called Everlasting Records, and I believe they were sold through Montgomery Ward or Sears, and this particular batch was a bunch of bad records, meaning that all the titles were wrong. So I had to go through these different records and just play them. If it was a march, it would be a vocal. If it was a vocal, it was a march. You know, all the records are wrong. The titles are wrong. But anyway, this particular record is called The Motor King March, and it's a trombone comic duet that I picked up from Mr. Houck. And if you were here and you could see the side of this cylinder record, there's a large chew mark in there. And I had asked Mr. Houck, I said, what's wrong with this record? He goes, oh, one of the mice ate it. So a mouse had gotten into the cylinder case and had chewed off a part of the record and used it for nesting material. But the record still plays.
Mice love those cylinders.
Where the strains of ragtime fill the cellar.
They're the musical men.
Are you listening?
Friends.
come from his old comfort side. And Lucy would shout as she hustled about,
just to get up by his side.
Like me a ragtime guy.
Honey, honey, hear that tune.
And them slippery fly trombones. Ain't it beautiful? Beauty, beautiful.
Honey, don't blow home, sweet home.
Stephen, don't you even waste your breath for telephone.
But side, side, when we glide, glide, glide to the music of your slide trombone. Honey, honey, hear that tune on that slippery side trombone.
Ain't it beautiful?
Don't go home, sweet home. Stephen, don't you even waste the best telephone. But side, side, when we glide, glide, glide to the music of the slide trombone.
Up, up, up from the old rascala,
where they both slip right up from the
So that was Collins and Harlan, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, I can recognize their voice anytime. They're one of my favorite duets, those guys.
That one I don't know much about.
But you like that trombone
stuff,
oh, yeah, right?
That was something.
Okay, there we're talking. Yeah. Now we're talking.
That is a good one.
Now, did I hear you mention something about some Caruso before?
Yeah.
What did you want to say about that? Tell us
I
the story.
The Caruso one, which I have, is a reproduction. Original Caruso record would sell around $300 or $400.
$3,000 or $4,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
on a cylinder?
On a cylinder.
Oh, on a cylinder. Very rare.
Caruso made no similar records in this country. They were made in Italy, and there's very few around.
Oh, he must be very
I
rare.
Know a fellow has one got a hole in it. He wants $300 with a hole in it.
Right. I see that.
And he can play it.
Right.
You just look at it.
You look at it.
Yeah.
But I have a reproduction of it, which on wax, it's very good.
Yes, it is.
Mm. I see guys selling records sometimes that are, like you say, cracked. You can't play them, but because they're so rare, they want to sell it for $100.
Yeah, I know.
And then what do you think about the guys that have records that are so rare that they never want to play them?
Yeah, I know. That's true. But, The records we've been playing, they're really mint.
Yeah.
They haven't been played much.
That's out of your special box.
Yeah.
Those records are from your A1 box.
Yeah, that was the box. They're from a private collection.
You hand-picked. Sure. Every record hand-picked. And
yeah, that was picked. Yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing I like to do here, is to have people like yourself bring in their records, because most people don't have any experience with this stuff.
That's true.
So this is an opportunity for them to hear what these records sound like, and especially from a good collection like yours.
Yeah.
Time to get them out of the basement and let everybody hear them.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's for the most of records you buy in these flea markets, they're not playable.
Yeah, you can get some real dogs out
they're
there.
They're not playable.
Yeah, I see
they
that.
Got, when a record has mildew on it, forget it. There's nothing will take that mildew off. That's wax,
yeah.
And it's right in the record. Yeah, it's not playable. And I've seen people charge as much as $10 for one of them.
Sure, sure.
Well, because a lot of people don't know what the value of the stuff is. They see, I see antique shops I go to sometimes. They have records that are unplayable, and they want to sell them for $15 or $20 each.
Yeah.
Well, people buy these records for a souvenir.
Right, I see, yeah, true.
Well, that's what they hope for. They won't know.
And some of these antiques, they sell just the boxes. With no record in it.
Right.
And they're using for pencil holders.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Okay. What do we have next, Bob? What do you have queued up?
Okay. This is a very interesting record, because it's a 4-minute record, and it has two songs on it. It's by Sousa's Band, and it's El Capitan March and Manhattan Beach March, and there's two different.
That's way $10 alone, that record.
Ooh, big money.
And it's a Sousa record, and I think you'll enjoy it. It's got the sound of the Sousa Band is always so intense, and they're so meticulous, and it sounds beautiful.
How about John Philip Sousa, Mr. Hawk? Did you ever see John Philip Sousa's Band?
Yeah, I seen it once. That was in Electric Park. Which people don't even know where Electric Park is.
Is that, where was it? I don't know where it is.
Where is it?
Electric Park. When I was a kid, that was called Electric Park.
Where's Olympic Park?
No, Electric.
That's in Irvington.
In Irvington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't know where Electric Park is.
Did they have concerts there? That's where they had concerts, or?
Yeah, they had some very good bands play there.
Okay.
Yeah. Sousa played there already.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Across from where the Morris Canal used to be, right? Where you live by the Morris Canal.
Oh, yes. I used to go swimming in the Morris Canal. Well, anyway, when you were swimming in there, you don't know what you're going to run into, a whore or run into a chicken or a dead pig. But nobody ever got sick. We never had no sickness in the neighborhood.
And that canal, they used to have the flatboats that would run across. Did they have mules, too, that would pull the boats?
Yeah, the mules.
No kidding.
Yeah, had mules. They were, and they used to cut mostly coal.
Okay.
And a lot of Oaks's Mill in Bloomfield, they had their coal come down on the canal.
I understand that Oaks Mill in Bloomfield made federal uniforms during the Civil War.
They made uniforms for the Civil War.
Wow.
And that was when their cloth was known all over the world. Hmm. That was we made uniforms for police and firemen and army. I guess they had the big contract with the Civil War time. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Also, what a lot of people don't know is that part of the Garden State Parkway was a canal also. Wasn't it that ran through Bloomfield and Nutley, that area?
Yeah, canal. Yeah, they used to call that the Canal Highway. Now, it's named after Kennedy, which was one of our great presidents, but originally they called it the Canal Highway.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, well. When poor Kennedy died, everybody wanted to come use Kennedy's name for something.
Yeah, Kennedy Park and West Orange, everything, yeah. Sure.
Okay, so let's get to John Philip Sousa, and that will bring back the memory of you seeing John Philip Sousa live.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
Park.
I see him. Man.
Okay.
I can't even prove it because I was alone. What the? Electric Park?
right, we'll have to make sure we hit the tonic on the end there. We'll drive a lot of musicians crazy with that.
I was that was playing a record recently at home where it got a skip like that, and I started rapping to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like my own little groove I was rapping to. I was going to break into it, but...
That was a musician.
Never mind.
I had to
mind.
End that tonic there. I'm sorry.
Never mind. Never mind. Well, that was a really nice one. Let's see.
Jim Stewart was stupid. The records are very expensive.
Yeah, Suzer is a good collector. And they sound so good. The quality of the records is so strong. And I mean, the band was so powerful, and the projection was incredible. I guess we have time for a few more records, maybe one more, but I would like to play the first song you ever heard and you can remember from 1905 is In the Shade of the Old Apple Tree. And it just says tenor, so I want to play your song.
Okay. Let me ask you about this, Mr. Hauk. I think about today, everybody, they have TV on all the time, they have the stereo on all the time, you go in the elevator, you hear music, there's music and sound everywhere. Yeah, now, when you were young, it wasn't like that, was
no.
it? So, what do you think about when you... Do you remember what your impressions were the first time hearing a phonograph, what you were thinking about it?
Well, when I was young, we didn't... But the phonograph was about the only entertainment we had. But in them days, we didn't have much time for that even, because the average person worked 10 hours a day. They didn't have much... There wasn't much enjoyment in them days. Maybe on a Sunday they would enjoy this stuff. Sunday was a big day. A lot of people worked six days a week.
Sure. And
when my days were working for $1 a day.
Boy.
And a foreman got $12 a week. A foreman.
And a gem cost $10 back then. So you had to spend your whole week's pay just for a little tiny poor man's gem phonograph, right? I mean, you know, you have to pay... A week's salary to hear some records.
So
there was Edison sent these phonographs out on consignment. You paid so much a month maybe 25
more.
Cents or something like that. Yeah,
sure.
I got posters on that. I can prove it. But
we believe you.
Yeah, that's
great. That was a lot of money then.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, rent was people pay $10-$12 a month. That was your rent.
I could go for that.
I see some of the Victor records that were for sale that were like $1 each. And that was a lot of money, $1 a record?
You had to really want that record for that. I mean, that's a day's work.
Just like these opera machines, they were sold for $125. Them days, only a rich person could own one of them.
That's why
they're so expensive today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's that.
Okay, Mr. Hauk, here's your song.
Before we go to that, this is probably going to be one of our last record, and we're going to, as usual, just let that run out. I just want to say thank you, Mr. Hauk, for coming down. I really enjoyed having you here and having your perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah. I really enjoyed coming down here. It was more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be. But the weather's been so bad enough to make it, you know, yeah,
well,
it was kind of suicide.
Well, I appreciate you coming out tonight in the monsoon. I mean, the weather is incredible, and I think
so. I had a very enjoyable evening here.
Great.
Well,
he played my favorite record.
I always get to talk to the people who listen to the show, and they always enjoy hearing the perspective of different guests, different people that come down, and their collections.
Yeah.
And you're certainly one of the most fun guests that I've had on the show.
Yeah. Wait, get my hand out of my pocket, hold on.
Keep it warm.
I can't get victim. My homework. Key in my finger. Okay.
Excellent job.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hauk. And as usual, after the show's over, everyone, we're, you know, busy talking and playing records here. If you'd like to give a call to the station, the number here is 201-678. Be happy to say hello to you and answer any questions you have. And I'll be back again in 2 weeks, perhaps by myself, perhaps with another guest, and talk to you, and you'll be hearing from me then. And Mr. Hauk, so this is, just tell us, introduce this last record for us.
Under the Shade of the Apple Tree.
Boy.
That's the record we're going to play for you.
Yeah, Shade of the Old Apple Tree.
Now, that's the first record you ever heard.
Yeah, it's the first one.
Oh,
yeah, it's the first record I can remember. Yeah.
All right, going back to 1998, recorded on cassette. Really good show from the archives there. I think I may have another show on, or two on cassette from those early days, and definitely some DAT tapes of other guests. Have to dig those out and get some of those transferred. Because while WFMU was starting to do archives really far back, they started playlists even before that, earlier. So I definitely have a lot of playlists up there that don't have audio, which I could probably fill in. Have to be one of my projects, especially something like this with guests, because what a great show it really was. All his points of view on things and his records, and really great to have a gentleman like that on, who passed away, I believe, a year or two after that show was recorded. And I'm going to talk to Bob about getting a photograph on the archive page of him, see if I can put that up there too. As you heard, I always love having guests on, so if you're someone who has a collection, I would welcome you to come on the show. And I sometimes do visits where I do recordings in different locations. So always willing to do that if I can pull it together. And the best way to contact me about that and about anything having to do with the show is using email, which is mac@wfmu.org. Or you could send a wax cylinder recording to the station, and I'll listen to that and get your message that way. Oh, I just want to take a second and say a couple weeks ago we had the WFMU Record Fair, which was a lot of fun. I had a lot of records there that I got rid of and other stuff, which was great. Sold some 78s, which was good, and really had a good time. Got to talk with a lot of people who were regular posters on the message board here, and also station folk and new and old friends. Always good, the WFMU Record Fair. I'm sure I'll be there next year, and I hope you will be too. And that's going to about do it for this edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. I'll be back next week with probably another variety show, but you never know what's going to pop up. Moving forward into the past. So until next week, this is your host, Mac of the Antique Phonograph Music Program, saying nighty night, everybody. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.1 FM, and online at WFMU.org.
Dear Eloise, I am writing to say a number of funny things I heard today. I heard that he's left you and run off to sea. Could be the best thing that's happened to me.
Two, three, four.
Writing a letter.
to make you feel better. Sorry to hear that he left you that way. I could have told you he was much older, so much older than you. You rushed him blindly, he treated you kindly, until he found out what he could get from you.
I've seen you slipping.